This is the Vocations Show with your host, Father Michael De Stoop.
Hello and welcome again to the Vocations Show. I'm Father Michael De Stoop. Did you know that God has made you to carry out a unique mission in this world? No one can take your place. You might carry out this mission as a religious brother or sister, a married person, a priest, or as a single person. Well, if you're trying to tune in to what God is saying about your mission, this is a great place to do it. Each week we'll bring interviews, reflections, talks, news, and we'll also answer your vocations questions. Today in the show, why do you think a 16-year-old non-practicing Catholic would end up wanting to give her whole life to help the spiritual growth of others? We'll find out why later on the show from Lorena Potter Carrero, a 27-year-old member of the Marian Community of Reconciliation. But first up, he is a man with a mission and he doesn't mind a challenge. De La Salle brother Mark McEwen speaks with Elizabeth Arblaster about his mission to show the unconditional love of God to disadvantaged children. A mission which has taken him all over the world, from Papua New Guinea to Northern Australia, California to Pakistan. Brother Mark shares some great stories and common sense for guys who are wondering whether the brother's life might be for them.
Today with the auxiliary visitor for the De La Salle brothers, Brother Mark McEwen. Welcome to the show, Brother Mark.
Thanks, Elizabeth.
Now, what is an auxiliary visitor?
Well, the simplest way to explain that is basically the second in charge of the brothers in Australia, New Zealand, now Pakistan as well, and Papua New Guinea.
Okay. So you've just been in the Napa Valley in California. What were you doing over there?
I have. I was there for 5 days, and I got invited to go across there to speak with 5 young men who are in their novitiate year for the De La Salle brothers. And that's a special year where they spend more time really looking and discerning if this is a call for them. And the main reason for going there is one of our young men from Australia is doing his novitiate year over there, Lewis. So I went there to have time with him and actually just spend Christmas with him. And I was just amazed with these 5 guys ranging in ages from 25. Lewis was the youngest. The oldest was 44. All sort of committed to really sort of searching out if this life is for them. So it's a great experience. Diversity of life experience for these 5 guys. One actually was a US Coast Guard officer. And so it's just great sitting down talking to him about his life journey before he joined the brothers. So it's a great experience, a beautiful part of the country too. Napa's famous for wine, so I was able to sample a few of the local wine products while I was there. So it was a great, great time. Not long enough though.
What was the journey into the brothers for you?
I grew up in Queensland, so I'm a proud Queenslander. I went to a De La Salle school just north of Brisbane. My recollections of school is the thing that stands out the most about the brothers is the way they related to us as students. And I guess I started thinking about the option of the brothers when I was in year 10 and then sort of let it sort of slide a bit and actually went to Teachers College. But during that time at Teachers College, the idea kept coming again, so I thought maybe I needed something about it. So I searched out one of the brothers who I knew and he said, listen, keep thinking about it. And I decided that I'd go teaching first. So I actually taught up in North Queensland for a year at a school run by the Mercy Sisters and Christian Brothers. But again, the idea kept coming back, so well, I needed something about this. So I got in contact with the brother who was looking after vocations at the time. He came up to interview me. I had my interview in the local pub where I spent a bit of time because I was playing a bit of rugby on the weekends. So it was the rugby culture of playing the footy match and then ending up at the pub. It was certainly a part of my life that year. Yeah. So the brother at the time, Ambrose was his name, came up to interview me in the local pub to join the brothers. Mm. And basically, I haven't looked back since then. It's been a great, great 30 years. Mm. Lots of challenges, but on the whole, it's been a real blessing for me during that time.
What are some of the things that you've done in that time, like just some highlights?
Probably some of the highlights would be I was lucky enough to have 3 years working in Papua New Guinea. And that came almost a year after I sort of finished my novitiate year training as a brother and made my first vows. And I actually volunteered to go up there. And at the time, they mustn't have had too many other volunteers because I was accepted. It was a challenge, I think, going up there. I guess I wanted to go up there because of the excitement, but sort of, and certainly was an exciting time. But once you got up there, you really realised that you're in a different world, in another country. But I think my lasting memories of my time up there is the way the young people valued the fact that you'd come from another country to be there for them. And just the other day, just to jump to the present, I met up again with a young man that I taught up there who's since joined the Brothers. So it's just great to catch up with him again to know after 35 years or 25 years that he still remembered me from that time and that he'd made the decision to be a brother. But I think the thing that got me through was just the kids that I taught. These kids, to get to school at the start of each term, some of that to walk for a day, and they basically arrived with the clothes they had on. My last memory of this place is just the day I left when I sort of realised that I stayed there for a year and realised that I needed to come back to Oz just to, re-ground back here. And as I was hopping in the plane and taking off down this incredible airstrip, you take off this airstrip, you go down the hill, and then you bank into a valley. If you don't, you end up 1,000 metres down on the bottom of the valley. But the kids had lined the airstrip to wave goodbye to me, so that was a fairly emotional time. But I think it was just the way the kids really value the fact that you're there for them. I think that, for me, that's really sort of encapsulated in that whole name Brother, which has a strong significance for the De La Salle Brothers, because when John Baptist De La Salle first brought a group of men together to respond to the needs of his time back in France, they actually chose that name. And the reason they chose the name Brother was they wanted to be brothers to each other in community, but older brothers to the young people that they taught in schools. And for me, I think that sort of really sums up a key thing about being a brother. It's all about a relationship. And for me, that relationship, the key relationship, though, is that relationship you have with God in prayer, but then that overflows into other relationships that you have. So it's been a... That time PNG was really, really special. I guess another challenging time, I was lucky enough to have 3 years working at Boys Town up in Queensland. At the time, it was a residential care facility for boys from 11 to 16. And a key element of these boys is that they, over 90% came from what we'd call dysfunctional families, either living with just their mother, just their father. And all of them had been sort of put there by a judge for either their own protection, because they'd already sort of started in a life of crime, or they're just chronic truants. Again, that was a special place because they're very tough kids. Mm. It sort of really sort of stretched your teaching skills there, because they weren't as amenable to education as most kids. But again, it was just... All they really wanted was they just wanted to know that you were interested in them, and that no matter what they did, and they really sort of challenged you in a lot of ways, that you'd always forgive them. And I think Boys Town, a lot of the listeners might know, is really founded on the Boys Town from the US. And it's a whole thing about sort of love the boy and hate the sin. Mm. Okay, I hate the crime. And I think that was one thing that everyone working there was that message that we try to get across, that you really have to love those boys. They're going to challenge you, they're going to abuse you, they're going to try you as much as possible. Mm. But I think always need to be prepared to accept them, challenge their behaviour, but accept them. I think for me, that taught me a lot about sort of accepting people, understanding where people are coming from, and I guess trying to put yourself in their position and how you'd be if you had to go through that. Probably one sort of story that stands out for me most about what the brothers and the teachers are trying to do there happened one year when the boys used to go home at Christmas time. And we sent one boy home to North Queensland, and he arrived home. When he arrived home, he was dropped off, I think, by a taxi, and he found a note on the front door from his parents. "We've gone away from the holidays. Look after yourself." So this kid had sort of, he was in one of my cottages that I looked after, and he was talking about going home to see his family, and he got home to see this. We got a phone call from the police that night saying, we found this guy wandering the streets. What he wants to do, we said, just put him on a plane, send him back. So he came back and he had Christmas dinner with the brothers. But I think it was, and that situation wasn't uncommon. I think it's really taught me about really sort of being there for people in their times of need.
As you're speaking, I wish that the listeners could see you. You're so passionate about your vocation, and I was reading something before I met up with you, and it seems that the De La Salle brothers, Freedom Tough, I was reading about these brothers who were going to put up their hands to go to southern Sudan. One of the brothers said, there was no earth-shattering decision to leap into the dark, just fidelity to the vow I made when I joined the brothers, to go wherever I may be sent and to do whatever may be required of me. What's the story behind the order?
The order goes back over 330 years now to a man who was a Catholic priest in France. So it goes right back to 1680. And Jean-Baptiste de La Salle was a priest who was engaged in parish work in a limited way. And he almost by chance got involved in this whole work of meeting the needs, educational needs of young people in his hometown. So it was really quite by chance. When you read some of his writings, he basically said, I had no intention of committing myself full-time to this work. But bit by bit, this is where God led me. He saw a situation which needed someone to respond to it. And at that time, it was a situation where particularly young boys in his hometown of Reims in France were literally roaming the streets. Because at the time, if you wanted an education, you had to have the money to pay tutors. So he decided that, I'm going to do something about this, but I need to bring people in to help me. So he brought in a small group of men initially to start a couple of schools up in his hometown. Initially, they weren't a religious order, but they were moving that way, and they only made one vow, and that was a vow of association. And they vowed to associate together for the purpose of providing an education for these poor boys of his hometown. That developed. It wasn't really fast-growing like some have said that the priest orders, but what was unique about it is really it was the first order of just lay religious. So really in the church were the first order of teaching brothers that started. When he died in 1719, the brothers were in 20 schools or 20 towns, and there were only 100 brothers. So it wasn't a great sort of development time. But since then, the brothers have developed, and they're now in 83 countries throughout the world. Mm-hmm. And more recently, they've moved into the southern Sudan, as you've just identified. But I think the key thing about De La Salle was, and the thing about his spirituality that I like, was his a prayer which we pray in all our schools, let us remember we're in the holy presence of God. So he was someone who was really sort of in tune with the fact that each and every moment we're in God's presence. And one of his, I love going back over some of his writings, and one of my favourite parts is where he says that there's no place that's not honoured by God's presence. And to me, that's sort of, I just keep coming back to that. And for me, particularly when I work with teachers, I challenge them to think about when they go into that classroom, okay, that becomes the place of God's presence for them. But I think even more so, De La Salle challenged the teachers and the early brothers to see in each of their students the presence of God. And another prayer which we pray with our students is a simple prayer which we pray, live Jesus in their hearts, and the students respond forever. And so he's fairly strong on the fact that having a personal relationship with Jesus. He himself sort of spent a lot of time in prayer himself. But another key aspect of our La Salle spirituality is the reliance on the Holy Spirit. And a lot of his writings, an expression that comes through all the time, is frequently give yourself to the Holy Spirit and be guided by the Holy Spirit in all that you do. And he talks about the spirit of faith, to look on things with the eyes of God, to always keep God in view of in your decision-making. But also another aspect of our spirituality is the spirit of zeal. And for me, the best way to describe what that is, it's really having a passion. And even before, say, recent church doctrines, which would talk about having a passion for God and a passion for people, that's what De La Salle was on about in his time, having a passion for those poor young people of his time. I think he's tried to engender that down through the ages. So in all the places where we've worked throughout the world, that's a key driving force to really sort of meet the needs of young people, particularly those most in need.
You're listening to the wonderful adventures of Brother Mark McEwen on The Vocation Show. Next up, Brother Mark talks about the importance of prayer, how a call to the brothers might present itself to you, and about test running the brother's life.
In all vocations, there's always going to be joys and there's going to be tough times as well. What have you done over the years to help you remain passionate about your work and grow in your vocation and live it well?
I have to say, without a doubt, I would not be here today as a brother if I wasn't committed to having a daily prayer life. I just know that for a fact. And my day normally starts, and this has been developed over time, you grow into this as a brother, you don't sort of start off straight away sort of fully committed to a prayer life. But my normal day would start now with, I'm a caffeine addict, so I need my coffee. So also a morning person. Now, I've discovered there's not too many morning people around, but I like the mornings. So I like the mornings because it's nice and quiet, even in the brother's house. So in my own community, I'll get up about 5, grab a cup of coffee, and normally try and have about 50 minutes just in quiet, reflective prayer time. And for me these days, that takes the form of, I like praying in my bedroom, even though we've got a chapel in the house, I prefer praying in my room, and I set up a little prayer lamp, which I light as a reminder of God's presence. And I'm growing more and more convinced of the need for silence. So I normally would start my prayer time with just 20 minutes of silence. And I read recently sort of the whole expression about contemplation. To me, a key aspect of being a person who is contemplative is to be a person who has times of silence. And then after that time of silence, I'll normally sort of engage by just reading the daily scriptures and just what are they saying to me in my current situation. I was lucky enough to do a retreat during the year, and it really challenged me in this area about how you pray. And expression which the priest that led the retreat said, you have to pray honestly, and you can't fool God. And I guess I'm growing more and more aware of that, to really tell God as it is, If you're not feeling too good, tell that to God. And you might think, well, God already knows that, but he also wants to hear from you. So I guess I've been challenged more and more to actually pray from where you're at, pray from your reality, pray for your emotions. And that's the best way to actually grow in your relationship with God. And again, I guess go back to some of the writings of De La Salle, and one of his other expressions is to learn from Jesus by frequently being in his company. And to me, I've been trying to have that as part of my daily life, not just in my prayer time. So in a sense, while I have an intentional time for my personal prayer, I think that sort of, it doesn't stop there. The challenge for me is to be a prayerful person, not just a person of prayer, but to actually let it flow into my life. So I often find myself trying to stop during the day, even if just for 5-10 seconds, to actually reconnect with the fact that I'm in God's presence. Is there anything needed to let me know, God, about how things are going? So I'd have to say, having that disciplined prayer life. And you might think discipline sounds funny, but I think you have to do it, otherwise I wouldn't be here.
Well, we have discipline in other important areas of our life, don't we? In all important areas of our life. So you have a special program, don't you, for young men who are thinking of joining the Brothers? Can you tell us about that?
Yep, the last couple of years we decided to develop a program where give people a chance to come in for a couple of weeks to see what the Brothers' life is all about. And the name we gave it was Test Drive the Brothers' Life. So the last 2 years we've run four programs, two to Papua New Guinea, one to Balgo Hills in Western Australia, and one recently to New Zealand. And essentially this program allows young men to do two things. One is to live in a brother's community for the 2 weeks, to join the brothers for prayer, for meals, so the community aspect and the prayer aspect of the brother's life, but also to engage in some type of ministry with the brothers. So, for example, two young men came with me to New Zealand late November last year to our school in South Auckland, which is in a very poor area, 95% Polynesian at the school. And these two young men worked alongside one of the brothers and the teachers who look after this particular school that kids come from a situation where their families don't speak English at home, so the literacy and numeracy isn't too good. So they actually worked alongside, almost one by one, with kids, helping with reading, with their writing. So it's really given the sense of, well, this is what the brothers do, so they can get a test for that. Last year, five young men went up to Papua New Guinea with me, and again, that was a totally different experience, and we engaged in one of the schools there. Up there, we actually, the school wanted us to run a leadership program. So I worked with the young men that came with me, and we devised a leadership program for these students at the school. So basically, it's just 2 weeks, so it's two weeks out of your life, and then it gives them, in a sense, a feel for what the brother's life is all about. And subsequent to that, I keep in contact with those I want to via Facebook, and so there's no commitment after that. It's a case of the commitment is those 2 weeks. And the other thing with these young guys is the brothers provide the accommodation and the food and the opportunity, but the young men that engaged the last 2 years have paid for their own airfares to get there. So it really shows a commitment of these young men. I've been blown away. Particularly last year, the four guys that came with me took time off work to do this. To me, there is interest out there, but it's about having the opportunity to actually to engage in a chance to see. So that's our key program, the Test Drive the Brothers Life program. Having said that, we also, if people get in contact with me, I've been able to arrange like a week living experience.
Sure. And for those who want to know more about that, what's your website?
Website's nice and easy to remember. It's delasoulbrothers.com, and they can go to that, and that way they can get in contact with me through our website.
If you want the link to the website, you can go on to cradio.org.au and find the link there. Thanks so much for joining us today, Brother Mark.
It's good to be here, and think about it. As I said, the life of a brother is not for everyone, but I'm sure right this moment God is drawing some of you to be brothers. So don't discount it.
Thank you.
You're listening to The Vocation Show on cradio.org.au.
That was De La Salle brother Mark McEwen. If you're interested in speaking with Brother Mark or would like to check out the De La Salle brothers' website, you'll find the links on today's Vocation Show program guide at www.cradio.org.au. And next up, if you were a teenager who was more interested in partying than praying, then you might be able to relate to our next guest. Lorena Porter-Carrero shares the extraordinary transformation she experienced from disinterest to discipleship.
Hello, my name is Lorena Porter-Carrero. I am from Peru, South America, and I am a member of the Marian Community of Reconciliation, people also call us Fraternas. We are a society of apostolic life. That means that we are lay consecrated women. We remain in the world, but we are consecrated to God, and we live to serve others. We engage with culture, evangelizing the culture, we embrace professions, and we live in community. We also engage in activities with young people, families, and the most needy. But I came here to answer a question. How did I hear God's call? So I'll start when I was 16 years old. I wasn't really a practicing Catholic, even though I was raised up in Peru, in South America, that it's grounded in very Catholic values. But I wasn't really committed to my faith. I really didn't know Christ very well. So when I was around 16, I had what people would call a normal life. I went to school, I went to parties, I had friends, I had fun, loved music, movies, loved hanging out with my friends and having a good time. But God wasn't really part of my life. But still, I was searching for something more. I remember myself wandering in class and thinking, there's something missing, a reason. I wanted to be free. I wanted freedom. I wanted to embrace reality. I wanted to have a life that I wouldn't change for anything. The main question was, what am I doing here? Then my friends went to this Catholic event called Convivio, and I didn't want to go. I was too cool for doing something like that. And they came back so happy. They had a great time, and they had a very different weekend from any other weekends. So they convinced me to go to the follow-up events. And I went with my friends. But to my surprise, I met amazing people, amazing Catholic people who were really joyful and they were serving others. And they were so free and authentic. And then I realized that something that made them difference, made the difference in them, was God. So I wanted to hang out with them and get involved in the activities that they were inviting me to go. But I had all my ideas about religion and the church, and I wasn't really convinced. But I said, okay, I'll give it a go. I started to get involved and try to find out what all faith was about. Just to see, not to really get involved completely. So I started to go to different activities, start new friendships, I started to pray and to get to know God and get to know who Christ was. I started to ask more questions and read more about my faith. And before I knew it, I have found this truth, this meaning, this freedom, this authentic joy in my life. This journey took me around 2 years. It was a whole process, one step at a time. But then I got to the point that I was already a leader in this community, in this ecclesial movement. I was doing apostolate myself, but I had to face the question that I really didn't know what was God's plan for me. So along with the CLM people, the Christian Life Movement, all these Catholics running these events, I met the Fraternas, the community of lay consecrated women within this spirituality. They were my friends and my guidance. And I look up to them. They were these spiritual, joyful, and strong women who had given everything to God and to apostolate. To be honest, no longer after I met them, like years before, I had asked myself, am I called to be like them? But then I said, no, later, I'll think about this later. But the question popped in my head now and then. But I always gave myself the same answer. But as I told you, it was a process. So I got to the point that I needed to ask myself, what is my vocation? Where am I going? I heard this phrase from St. Catherine of Siena. That is, if you are the one that you are meant to be, you will set the world on fire. I was really touched and really questioned, fascinated by this phrase of this beautiful saint. It really expressed my deepest longings. I wanted to be the one that I was meant to be, truly myself, so I could be fulfilled by bringing God to others, to really make a difference in the world. But I knew that I had to answer the first part of the question, if I was the one that I was meant to be. So I had to ask God, who I am, what are you calling me to do? You created me, you have a beautiful plan for me. So I started the journey of discerning my vocation. I knew I can't put this off anymore. It was killing me. And I knew that I had this question for a long time, but I didn't want to answer it because I knew deep down in my heart that the answer was huge, and I was scared of that. So I said, this is my life. I have to, you know, like, face this and be happy. And if I want to be happy, I have to make decisions. So I saw myself signing up for a retreat, and I went to this retreat, and we were discussing about sin, actually, not really pleasant topic, but really necessary. And we were talking about the things that we always know that God is calling us to do, but we don't do, like St. Paul. And I faced myself and I knew I have a vocation, and that's what I'm putting off. I know that. And I stopped there. And after that, we went to a retreat. We went, sorry, to a prayer where we have a crucifix. And the prayer was about, like, many times we don't respond to God's call, but he keeps calling us and he gives us the grace. But the most important point was after this prayer, I knelt down in front of this crucifix and I told God, I know what you're doing. You are calling me. And of course, by that time I was in tears, I'm feeling very insecure, but I knew it. Looking at God on the cross, I knew he was calling me to live his life, to lay down my life for others and for him mostly. So I said yes. I said to God, okay, I'm going to be a fraterna. This was the piece I was missing. This was the fulfillment that I was looking for. In the moment that I said yes, everything fell into place. I had the peace and joy that I was looking for my whole life. So I knew it. God had called me from all eternity to consecrate my life to him and bring him to others so they can also get to know him and find fulfillment in him.
The Vocation Show.
And now it's time for today's question.
The question today is, should an aspirant for a church vocation complete studies first?
Well, to answer your question, those who have already begun some study or training, but have decided to apply for a religious vocation before completing their degree, it may be especially perplexing or worrying for their parents, because in principle, it is a good thing to finish what is started. In circumstances where applicants for a religious vocation needs to grow in maturity, or need further time to discern their vocation properly, then I certainly recommend that they complete some study or join the workforce until they are ready to enter. Outside of these circumstances, this is if there is no question about their maturity and if clarity in their calling is not lacking, they would do well to consider the following things. Firstly, anyone can defer their studies rather than pull out altogether, so as to not burn their bridges, so to speak. This will enable them to pick up where they left off if they discover that they are not called to a religious vocation. Secondly, it is not uncommon for university students to change from studying from one degree to another. So why should anyone make a distinction when changing to a theological degree? Thirdly, those who seem to lack maturity or who need more time to discern their vocation are always recommended by the vocation director to continue with their studies or training before they assist them to make their application. Family members sometimes have concerns about their children entering a religious vocation if they have not completed any tertiary or other qualifications, feeling that they would like their son to have something to fall back on if they decided to leave the seminary. I can really sympathise with this perspective, as parents naturally want their children's futures to be safe and financially secure. There are a number of factors which are worth considering which may address some of these concerns. Firstly, speaking first of all about men studying for the priesthood, whilst they are in the seminary, they commence a Bachelor of Theology in the Catholic Institute of Sydney. This institute is a faculty of the Sydney College of Divinity, which is civilly accredited by the University of Sydney. This means that if a man decided to leave the seminary, the subjects he has completed would be recognised and accredited by most other universities and could go towards another degree. For example, his courses in philosophy can go towards a Bachelor of Arts, or his studies in theology could equip him to become a religious education coordinator in a Catholic school, or it could even assist him to become a school principal. And secondly, for those who do not continue to study for the priesthood or continue their formation in religious life, their time in formation is not wasted, as it can be a very maturing experience in which much learning and self-discovery takes place. Those who leave take the extra maturity and personal enrichment they have gained to whatever further studies and employment they may undertake. And thirdly, responding to any vocation, including marriage, requires and hinges on the ability to trust in God and his plans for one's life. The significant extent to which this is not easy is not exclusive to those God calls to be priests. Those he calls to marriage often need to change their initial plans in order to respond to their vocation if it arises when they were not expecting it. People in those circumstances may cut studies short, change jobs, or move into state or overseas in response to their future spouse's needs. And once married, they may stop working when children arrive. In a similar way, responding to a call to the priesthood or religious life requires a similar courage and flexibility. That courage and conviction to follow a path will serve a man well in his future, no matter what vocational path he ultimately follows. A fourth consideration is this. I think it is possible to attend university or undertake other training if a person decides to discontinue his or her religious formation. While there are advantages in completing a degree before entering a church vocation, some people feel that if they put off their plans in pursuing their vocation for a number of years in order to complete other studies, it may leave them feeling very unsettled and unhappy. It may it may also be very difficult for them to carry out those studies with happiness and conviction if they really feel that they want to be in a seminary, monastery or convent at that time. By contrast, those who pursue their calling and then discover that this is not their vocation are more likely to have a greater aptitude for whatever is ahead of them, because they will not be distracted by thinking, what if? What if? And fifthly, the maturity and life experience gained in a seminary or religious house is invaluable to young people's personal development. In addition to studying, they develop a whole range of insights, skills and habits for their life ahead. From my experience, the experience of life that men gain in the seminary does not compare poorly with those they may gain elsewhere. On the contrary, time in the seminary is an incredibly maturing experience for young men, because they live in community and experience life in a way which gives more insight than many other ways of life, especially during their pastoral work in parishes, schools, hospitals, nursing homes, etc. They're often touched by the privileged experience of being invited into a wide variety of people's lives in ways that others are not. They meet and mix with so many people. Priests often experience in 1 week what the average person would experience in a whole lifetime, because they are called to accompany those entrusted to their care in a wide variety of ways, from the cradle to the grave. And since seminarians are trained to serve others in this way, they accrue many experiences of life and encounter much of the world we live in which they would otherwise not see. Notwithstanding these considerations, I recognise that it is difficult and takes a great effort on the part of parents to trust that God will look after their son or daughter if one of their children decides to pursue a religious vocation. If you are in a position at the moment where you want to raise this issue with your parents, but you're not sure the best way to speak to them about it, or if you have fears about raising it with them, I really recommend that you speak to your vocation director about it. He or she will be able to suggest some practical ways to tackle the situation and also give you some help in how to deal with those fears through your prayer. Vocation directors, like myself, are often in the habit of visiting the family of those who are aspiring towards a church vocation. I've done this in the comfort of their home, which gives me the opportunity to listen to and address the parents' concerns.
Do you have a question about vocations? Just leave it on our message bank on 028 005 1530, or email them to vocations@cradio.org.au. Next up, vocations news and events from Sister Anthony Mary and Elizabeth Arblaster.
Hi, I'm Sister Anthony Mary Diago.
And I'm Elizabeth Arblaster.
We're here to bring you the latest news of events that can help you discern your vocation.
Good news from the Dominican Sisters of St. Cecilia. On the 27th of July, 24 young women received the Dominican habit and their new religious name. Among them were 3 Australian women. The following day, first vows of chastity, poverty and obedience were professed by 15 young women, including 2 Australians. And finally, in mid-August, the Dominicans will welcome their next group of young women who begin formation as postulants. The newest group includes 4 Australians. Please keep them in your prayers.
Young women discerning a vocation to religious life are invited to join the Dominican Sisters of St. Cecilia for a retreat at their convent in Regent's Park on the 23rd to the 25th of September. The retreat explores the life and charism of the Dominican Sisters and offers conferences on Dominican spirituality, religious life, and discernment. The retreat includes community prayers, adoration, silence, and reception of the sacraments. While on retreat, the sisters are available for further spiritual guidance and discussion. Before registering for this retreat, a discussion with the vocation director is required.
And more good news. On the 2nd of August, Brother Ruben Martello was ordained to the diaconate by Bishop Anthony Fisher. Brother Ruben is a member of the Friars of St. Francis, who look after the parish of St. Bernadette at Dundas Valley. For more information on the order, see www.friarsofstfrancis.org.
Men open to the possibility that God may be calling them to the priesthood are invited to a retreat at the Seminary of the Good Shepherd in Homebush from the 23rd to the 25th of September. The theme is Catholic Leadership. How are you called to build up the body of Christ? And speakers include His Eminence Cardinal Pell and Father Michael MacLean. People from all stages of discernment are welcome. The weekend is free, but registration is essential.
Finally, you're invited to come to 40 hours of adoration for vocations at the Seminary of the Good Shepherd in Homebush on the weekend of 21 to 23 October, during which we will celebrate the Feast of Blessed John Paul II.
If you missed any of those details or you want to know how to register, just go online to www.cradio.org.au and follow the links to the Vocation Show. That's it for the Vocation News this week. We'll see you next week. Bye.
You're listening to the Vocations Show on cradio.org.au.
And now let's turn to the scriptures to reflect on vocation. This reflection is brought to you by Dr. Robert Tilley. Dr. Tilley is a lecturer in Biblical Studies and Ancient Languages at the Catholic Institute of Sydney and a regular columnist of Annals magazine. If you've been enjoying Dr. Tilley's reflections and you'd like to hear more, check out today's program guide where you'll find out a link to Dr. Tilley's address at last year's Men's Discernment Retreat.
The Bible is neither a textbook on science, nor is it concerned to answer to our curiosity concerning the history of the ancient Near East. But first and foremost, the Bible is the history of the promise, which is to say the history of the working out of God's redemptive grace, the history of salvation. The problem is, for us, that in modernity we think that divine grace ought to be immediate to an individual. We think that we should stand alone before God, but in biblical Christianity this is not the case, which is why the church is essential for salvation. All grace comes to us through communion. All grace is mediated to us through communion, and there is in this something altogether wondrous and at the same time something altogether demanding, something to do with the very essence of vocation. What mediation means is that through the grace of God, we can become the means of grace to others and they to us. We have already seen how Abraham became the father of faith, by reason that through one line of his descendants, the promise would come. Abraham was told that it would be only through one of his sons, only one of his sons would be the son of the promise, and this was Isaac. But Abraham had another older son through the maid of Sarah, this being Ishmael. Later, Abraham and Sarah had their son Isaac, and it was Isaac, the younger son, who was to be the son of the promise. All of which seems very unfair to Ishmael, who was the older son. But let's note something that is often overlooked. First of all, both Ishmael and Isaac are sons of the promise to Abraham. For both Ishmael and Isaac were circumcised. Furthermore, Ishmael was also blessed with promises from God. Just as Isaac is promised countless descendants, so too is Ishmael promised. Indeed, Ishmael is promised more, because it is said that from Ishmael will come 12 mighty princes. We might even say that Ishmael gets more promise to him than Isaac does. Only there is one thing Isaac is promised that Ishmael is not, and it is this one thing that is the very essence of the promise proper. It is of the very essence of the history of grace. The promise made specifically to Isaac is that through his descendants, all nations of the earth will bless themselves. In other words, the glory of the promise is that Isaac's line will be the means of the blessing of grace to others. And this was Israel's vocation, and it is a vocation perfected in the church, by reason that the church is founded upon Christ's sacrifice on the cross. For the cross is the means of grace to all the world. The church is to be the salt of the earth, that is, the means of the blessing and preservation of the world, even of those who hate the church. And this is the vocation of the priest, to serve the people of God and thereby to serve the whole world, even those who hate priests and Christians. In this consists the altogether hard part of being a means of grace. Take Jonah as an example. Jonah was a prophet who tried to deny this very element of his vocation. For God called Jonah to go to the Gentiles in the Assyrian city of Nineveh, in order that through his prophetic preaching the whole city might repent and be saved. But Jonah hated the Assyrians and wanted them dead, and the last thing he wanted was to be the means of their salvation and blessing. But resist God though he might, God used storms, a giant fish, and force to get Jonah to fulfill his vocation. Nineveh was saved, no thanks to Jonah, although he was the means of grace. Every vocation is given not to serve ourselves and our own petty prejudices and conceits, but to serve others, including those whom we would rather hate and curse. We are called to be the means of grace to others, and in fulfilling this vocation in a willing manner, we too are blessed by God. If we allow our hatreds and prejudices to interfere with our vocation, then God's grace will still work itself out. Only we ourselves might be cast aside. We must bend ourselves to our vocation, not bend our vocation to ourselves. The charism of vocation witnesses to the fact that none of us stand alone, and that the promise of the grace of God demands of us the hardest thing of all, to strive to love our enemies, to bless those who curse us.
That's it for the show. Thanks for joining us. We hope you found this helpful. If you have questions, comments, or suggestions for guests you'd like us to interview, or topics you'd like us to look at, call us on 02-8005-1530 or email us at vocations@cradio.org.au. And don't forget, this and previous episodes can be downloaded at www.cradio.org.au. Follow the links to the Vocation Show. And next week, he's lectured at some of the world's renowned theological colleges in the USA and Rome, authored books, produced DVDs, and been a parish priest. But our guest next week is best known for the founder of a Catholic website which draws over 1 million visitors a year from every continent and provides hundreds of video clips, commentaries and radio sermons on the Catholic faith. Come and hear from Father Robert Barron, the founder of the groundbreaking ministry WordOnFire.com. Hear about his new 10-part documentary on the Catholic faith and why Father Robert Barron became a priest in the first place. See you then. Well, that's it for the Vocation Show today. I'm Father Michael De Stoop, and thanks for joining us. Goodbye for now, and don't forget, we're all called to holiness. How is God calling you to live it?